This is audiobook on the autobiography of Elizabeth Clara. Beyond the Light Barrier. The romantic story of the cosmic encounter between a South African woman and a man from Meton, a planet in Proxima Centauri, which is Earth-like regarding many aspects. Beyond the Light Barrier is the autobiographical story of Elizabeth Clara, a South African woman and Ekin, an astrophysicist from Meton, a planet of Proxima Centauri that, at a distance of about 4.3 light years, is our nearest stellar neighbor. Elizabeth was taken in his spaceship to Meton, where she lived with him and his family for 4 months and where she bore his child. Her life on Meton is fascinatingly described. Ekin brought Elizabeth back to Earth after the birth of their son, and continued to visit her thereafter. Ekin explained how his spaceship's light propulsion technology operated, and how it allowed him and his people to travel across vast interstellar distances. This technology is explained in detail in the book. Particular interest was shown in Elizabeth's experience by the British Ministry of Defence, and they announced that UFOs do exist and are now official. Elizabeth's story has attracted the attention of many countries, in particular America, Britain and Russia. In 1975 she was given a standing ovation at the 11th International Congress of UFO Research Groups at Wiesbaden, Germany, and her speech as guest of honor was applauded by scientists of 22 nations. In 1983 she addressed the House of Lords, in England, and her paper was also read at the United Nations. Alpha Centauri is the brightest star in the constellation Centaurus. Dedication to the memory of my sister, Mayflower, who struggled for existence in a hostile world, and dedicated with love to Ekin, who made it possible for this book to be written. Stranger in our skies, we were feeding our sea lion puppies in the stable yard when we saw it. The sun had just gone down behind the Drakensberg, and the early summer sky of the natal Midlands was clear and rain-washed after the storm had passed. The guinea fowl were calling to each other as they prepared to roost in the wattle tree that grew near the house. Suddenly, they stopped calling, and my sister and I both saw it at the same time. An enormous silvery disk swooped down toward us, moving with a changing brightness out of the clear expanse of sky, a globe of light as clear as a pearl. Fascinated, we watched it maneuver over us, while the puppies left their food and ran yelping into the kennel. Then suddenly another huge sphere fell out of the sky, rolling down toward us, glowing orange red and rotating slowly as it came, pockmarked with craters like the moon. A fiery and terrifying planetoid was silently and gracefully sweeping through the upper reaches of Earth's atmosphere, and as it slowly rotated, suspended on its course toward us, the silvery disk moved with a flash of light and paced beside it in a slow passage across the sky until the planetoid moved out of the sun's rays to the north, leaving a long, thick trail like smoke across the heavens. We both ran for the house, my heart thumping so loudly against my ribs that I was quite breathless when we reached the wide veranda where our parents were sitting, enjoying the evening tranquility. My sister told them what we had seen in breathless snatches of excitement, two small children with white, excited faces trying to tell of something fantastic in the sky. My father got up and walked to the edge of the long veranda and looked up into the sky. "Perhaps it was a meteor," he said. The wide stoep, peculiar to South African farmhouses, hid the sky with its sloping roof, and the view was across a beautiful expanse of lawns with great oaks and pine trees, the home park with brilliant flowers in long beds, azaleas and rhododendrons massed among the trees, and beyond, to the hills and the mountains of the dragon. "No, no," I insisted when I got my breath again. "Something out there saved Earth, our beautiful planet, from a ravening, desolate asteroid intent on a collision course and destruction." I paused, and then said, "And something out there, a beautiful spaceship from elsewhere, came in time to see our plight." "In time?" my father gently queried. "How do you know?" "Yes, I know." And putting my hand in my mother's, I went indoors with her to have supper. My mother's great gift of understanding was an everlasting joy to me, As in that moment the vibrations of time drew aside the nebulous mists of eternity and the womb of the future revealed itself to my questing soul. The grown-up's dinner was much later, and when my mother came to kiss us goodnight, she had changed into a flowing gown of shimmering gold. Maintaining the civilized standards of her aristocratic English background even in the distances of the African veldt, she brought the gracious way of life inherited from her noble family. Too excited to sleep, I lay awake listening to the heavenly music of Mozart as my mother played the Bechstein Boudoir Grand in the distant drawing room. Her magic touch on the keyboard liberated my soul to the heights of heaven as I relaxed and looked up through the wide open window into the starry sky and wondered if we would see the beautiful spaceship again. The year of Halley's Comet. I was born in the year of Halley's Comet, at the other farm set in the rolling thorn country overlooking the vast distances of the Lovald, where the Moo River meets the mighty Tugela in surroundings of startling beauty. The still nights of the full moon were filled with the rhythmic stamping and chanting of the Zulu, and the rhythm of the drums, rising and fading in volume, beat like a heart through the moonlit distances of the Thornveld. When we moved to the new farm in the foothills of the Drakensberg, Laddam, the Enduna, came with us. He refused to stay behind in the Thornveld where it was much warmer. He was an Akelhu and all would listen to his advice and words of wisdom, and he would not allow us to go elsewhere without him to take care of us. He rode the many kilometers on the grey mare my father had given him and appeared like a wraith in the stableyard as a howling blizzard swept down from the mountains of the dragon. In the beautiful rolling grass country of the Drakensberg foothills, I was allowed more freedom, and after lessons I would catch my pony and canter away to the solitude of the hills, often going to my favorite hilltop overlooking the farmstead in the valley. The pony would roll and then enjoyed the evergreen grass within the bow-lord dip at the top of the hill, browsing to her heart's content, while I would lie in the thick grass, watching the sky in the hope of seeing the never-to-be-forgotten spaceship my sister and I had seen from the stableyard in the valley below. Little did I realize what this hilltop would mean to me in years to come. Where the sky joins the earth at the horizon. Laddam would watch me go with the knowledge of centuries in his wise old eyes and send an Amfana to watch and see that no danger befell me. There were always eyes, though herd boys and a Bafana lying in the long grass as still as my saw swaying in the branches of a tree or squatting in an outcrop of rocks. Nothing ever goes unseen. All is known. This faculty, which is born and bred in the African veldt, spreads its influence to the white children conceived within its embrace. Laddam always called me by my Zulu name. Langabiza, Inkosazana, raising his hand in salute, and my mother looked at me with wondering eyes. To meet little chieftainess, to meet one who brings together, he explained to my mother. The golden hair of her head will bring the Abelungu from the sky, and there will be a meeting together, Laddam said. They are the sky gods who once lived on this world, but afterward ascended to the sky over our heads by means of the spider's thread in clouds of lightning and thunder. White people then he would tell me in the expressive language of the Zulu about the folklore of his people while I sat on the garden wall. I could understand the Zulu tongue, and I listened while he unfolded the folklore of his tribe, which was more enthralling and fascinating than any tale from elsewhere. I sensed his sincere belief and the ring of truth in his narrative, and I would glance up into the depths of the blue sky with wondering eyes as he told of many strange and mysterious things. Once upon a time, a man and a woman came down from the sky on a cloud and alighted upon a hilltop. They were white and shining, with hair of gold. Their village is said to be lighted by a mightier light than any on this world. The people wear shining clothes and the huts are thatched with shining grass. They were caught up to heaven again by a flash of lightning. They are goodly to look on, beautiful and radiant. Their clans are taller and lighter complexioned and markedly different in feature. These heaven dwellers will return with the lightning bird whose scales glitter in many colors. It is blue or gold, or it is red or green like a metallic iridescence. And when you are a grown woman, you will go to the mountain top and there you will wait for the heaven dwellers and there will be a meeting together, a mating. You belong to the heaven dwellers. We know this. Mfiti has told us. There, he said with a long, drawn out breath and pointed a gnarled finger. There, on the mountaintop, the lightning bird whose blue and gold scales glitter in many colors like the rainbow will come for you, Inkasazana. The heaven dwellers used to live here in a big land far to the south, but afterward ascended to the sky by means of the spider's thread from the lightning bird. Some of our people have gotten into the heaven country by climbing a mountain or a tree, ascending by means of a rope uncoiling from a cloud, or by the thread the spider obligingly spins for them. The Zulu say, who can plait a rope for ascending, that he may go to heaven. Into the sky for Zulu means the sky, and we Zulu have long had a high opinion of ourselves to be tall like the sky and not mingle with the lesser tribes of black peoples. Our destiny lies in the proud aggression of our Izimpi, who await the return of our sky gods. Cattle and horses were sent down from the heaven country for the sustenance of the Zulu. Only white cattle and white horses were sent, but the horses died of a fever in our country, and the few that were left raced away one day before the great wind of a storm, while the cattle flourished and became as numerous as Inonikai Pumuli. And when the big drought came, we turned to eating the flesh of the white cattle for sustenance, and by so doing became a warlike people. The white birds that have no rest. The spirits of our ancestors remain in a village in the center of the world, and clumps of tall trees beside mountain tons show the way to the underworld. These trees are cared for and venerated. The ghost country can only be reached through caves or holes in the ground, and it is not usual for the heaven dwellers to be found in the company of the underground dwellers by the slope where the sky joins the earth at the horizon. There is also the Tokalush who comes out of the ground to make unlawful love to women. He can live in the water, and it is said that this being has been seen on the banks of the Umzinduzi River near Umkambati, beyond Biedermeritzburg. A being with a short, hairy body. There was no sound, only complete silence. As Ladam told me of these things, the sun dimmed as sudden, scudding clouds swept across its disk. A black cloud gathered to the east with sudden jagged flashes of forked lightning playing about its flat base. As the menacing cloud moved closer, I cried out with delight as we both saw the great silvery spaceship glowing with a white radiance against the awesome cumulonimbus. The terrible, broad funnel of a tornado began to form from the base of the cloud, swaying and twisting as it reached downward toward the ground, moving swiftly and haphazardly along its destructive path and heading up the valley toward the homestead. Attracted by the deafening roar of the mature tornado, my mother's anxious face appeared at the drawing room windows. I saw the sudden wonder in her eyes as she caught a glimpse of the spaceship moving across the terrifying tornado, and the broad funnel swayed as it lifted over us. Looking up, my awestruck eyes beheld the interior of the great funnel, swaying gently and bending slowly toward the east, filled with the pale blue light of electricity. It stood motionless over us save for a slow up and down pulsation. Higher up, the funnel was partly filled with a bright cloud that shimmered like a fluorescent light. This brilliant cloud was in the middle, not touching the smooth, rotating walls, which looked as if it were composed of rings moving one behind the other, rippling down toward the rim in a wave motion. It pulsed like a live thing, and as the higher ring moved onward, the ring immediately below slipped over to get back under it. I found myself involuntarily responding to the rhythm of the great rings as the pulse beats in my head kept time with their wave motion. Yet there was no sound, only complete silence, and as the wave motion reached the bottom of the circle, the far rim of the funnel jerked downward and long, vaporous, pale blue streamers extended out and upward from the roof of the house. And then the thick opaque rim passed over, without touching the house or the surrounding trees. A few feet further on, the rippling motion within the funnel jerked downward and flicked a tall pine tree away like a flash of light. When the funnel touched it, the tree dissolved, the parts shooting off to the right like sparks. Again the funnel touched down, demolishing an empty shed, and with a frightening roar, spent its fury in the hills beyond. Laddam's face had aged in those few moments of sudden danger. Shaking his head with awe, he explained that the Heaven Dwellers and their lightning bird with glittering silver scales had come to save us again as they had done that evening many months back. Therefore, the Mfiti was telling the truth. Humankind is not unique. The angry cloud had not finished with us. As I ran into the house, a ball of lightning surrounded by a glowing blue haze moved along the telephone wires into the house. It squeezed past me through the doorway and out into the garden as if it had a mind of its own. The fiery sphere swiftly moved along the ground like a creeping corona discharge in the electric field and then shot up the bole of an oak tree, returning to the serrated cloud base above in a flash of lightning. Bits of bark scattered through the open doorway, and the whiplash crack of the lightning channel's explosive shockwaves knocked me sprawling on the polished floor. My Siamese cat sprang to my aid, spitting defiance at the elements beyond the door, her feline sensitivity outraged by the sudden proximity of magnetic lines of force. Emotionally disturbed, she padded about the hall and refused to be comforted until I gathered her up in my arms and ran through the house to a more neutral spot. Laddam called the beautiful grass-covered uplands where our homestead nestled Mpofana, a musical name well suited to the rolling hills where the long grass sings in the south wind. "Good horse country," my father said, "where he could breed the white horses so dear to his heart." I would watch them gallop with the wind that blows down ahead of an approaching storm, drinking the wind like Muhammad's sacred white mare, or like Pegasus, whose real home is in the upper sky, where one must go upon wings to see it. It was here that Selene was born and given to me, a true daughter of the wind. Tossing her delicate head and turning to me with gentle affection, nudging her soft muzzle into my back, she would stand in the open doorway of her loose box, the classic curve of her head outlined against the darkness within like snow upon the blue molecules of the sky. Her ancient lineage is lost in the mists of time. There is no trace in the history of the past to indicate the origin of her white ancestors. Could it be the stony uplands of an arid land where first they set hoof on earth to gladden the hearts of men? Or perhaps from the empty coolness of a cloud drawing the golden chariot of Helios, as the white horses pranced across the aura of the sun coming to earth as a culmination of the sun's rays, where white is the great principle of light from the farthest spiral galaxy to the minutest microatoms within the atoms. Bred in the cradle wind of heaven, the snowy white horses brought to earth the graceful rhythm of dancing snowflakes. They moved with the vibrations of time in perfection of composition as only the soaring imagination of Mozart could conjure. Mozart, who brought the majesty and peace of heaven to earth in a life of sublime creation, whose life was cut short, destroyed by an envy whose dark and sinister intent is inherent in mortal man. What legacy of immortal music could there have been for humankind had he been allowed to live, had he not been poisoned by the black alchemy of the age? The unearthly white horses are a legacy for humankind. In this age of mechanization and frightening technology, people of Earth are merely human beings while each horse is unique, a genius of its species. An elemental force, like a dream in the drab emptiness of our time. As they tread the soil of earth in the rolling high grass country of Mpofana, perhaps there is a similarity to the heady atmosphere of the stony uplands of yore, when earth was younger and closer to her star and the planet of their origin. Laddam had said the white horses came from the heaven country, and these are their descendants. I looked into the mysterious sky, remote and never still, and wondered about nature's plan for men of Earth. Will they ever grasp and understand her plan of evolution set for them? Will they realize one day that the whole universe in which they have their being is life, composed of energy and matter, and that they are merely a part of its condensed energy? Humankind is not unique. He is merely a creature of the cosmos who is still too immature to comprehend the profound truth of his origin, his galactic origin. Perhaps a race memory, nourished and retained within his subconscious through centuries of Earth time, may burst forth in the splendor of truth when he treads the road to the stars and returns into the fold of the universe in which he is his being. The magic of the lodestone is the basis of all life. Growing up and going to live overseas to further my studies could not dim the memory of the great silver spaceship hovering in the mysterious sky. Unconsciously I would look up into the depths of blue, hoping, my eyes clouding with tears I could not restrain, as a snatch of music or a sunset in the sky would cause me suddenly to catch my breath in memory. Even marriage and the birth of my first child could not ease my longing. My husband chided me on being so restless and flew me into the sky in a tiger moth biplane, teaching me how to fly. Encouraged by his understanding, I would fly off into the depths of blue, seeking the ship of space in her own environment. The hazards in the sky were few and the lovely days clear with endless vision. I headed toward the Drakensberg with the rolling green hills spread out beneath. Only an isolated thundercloud prowled to the west. Suddenly, I was struck by a volley of hailstones out of the sunlit sky. The beautiful white anvil cloud that was soaring innocently in the sky spewed a barrage of ice across the blue from its scarf-like fringe. I instantly banked away to escape, but the angry cloud had not finished with me. It released a bolt from the blue. Lightning wrapped the top of my head and ran through my hands into the control column. Pale green sparks jumped in front of my eyes and soft bluish tongues of light played about the wingtips and propeller, forming an eerie corona about the little craft diving through the air while the muttering thundercloud prowled on, looking for something new on which to vent its spleen. Lightning is only dangerous when one is in contact with Earth, and if one depends on thunderstorm manners and behavior in the Great Presence, there is no need to be afraid at all. I soon learned to love and become one with the whirling thunderheads, though I always kept my distance. Great swirling clouds, their cells growing, fusing and multiplying in a chain reaction of exploding cumulus, would spring up like amoebas, generation by generation, moving across the face of Earth. I, with my tiny plane, would find a safe cloud canyon through which to fly, or I would pass to the left to avoid headwinds while the thunderhead boiled upward until the frigid heights flattened its top and the wind tapered it to a leeward point. I found happiness in the sky. I loved to feel the wind high in the sky as the plane soared through the ocean of air, to sense the rhythm of the wind as the airy depths became a fluid mass that I could see, understand and trust to go with the wind or against it, and to know which is the lee side of a range or hill, for there is danger on the lee side when flying with the wind. For us who see from the distances in the sky with the clean fresh wind blowing in our faces, truth is the messenger of joy, an understanding of the soul toward the firmament beyond. To tune into the vibrations and waves on certain combinations of harmonics, to listen for the cosmic celesta, is to release the elusive magic of truth. It was glorious to move through the uncharted sky, threading a way through the depths of air, the substance of which the sky is made, where the clouds float in all their glory and the wind is the spirit of the sky's third dimension. There, the forces of magnetism permeate all matter and all life, and the connection between magnetism and the mind is a reality, while in the geomagnetic field there is an affinity with the universe, which is the source of all telepathic thought. The magic of the lodestone is the basis of all life. It holds the stars and planets in place and is responsible for their birth and evolution, pervading our entire world in an affinity with the galaxy. I could sense an affinity beyond normal human conception. High in the sky, one can see the whole air, mountains and the sea beyond with the faint envelope of air that wraps the Earth. At sunset, the Earth's shadow rises in the east, steadily mounting the sky as a blue darkness, a prelude to the many hued stars of the cosmic spectrum. High in the sky I sensed the nearness of something alien. I responded to a telepathic power beyond the mysterious sky. As I droned homeward through the flute note of the wind, my thoughts became a conviction and my mind responded to this mysterious power like a barometer. Then one evening the mysterious stranger in our sky returned, and I knew my mind was being influenced as we flew over the Drakensberg. I was flying with my husband in a DH Leopard Moth from Durban to Barra Gwynarth. The weather was clear and the Drakensberg lay ahead, stretching across the skyline, a rugged wall of darkness against the golden yellow of the sun's longer wavelengths. We were soon over the escarpment, our engine roaring in the strain of sudden turbulence. Above us, the southern skies had lost the pink counterglow that heralded the dark azure blue of Earth's shadow in the east. It rose as a huge arch to fill the whole sky with the fathomless velvet of darkest space, studded with stars and planets blazing out as beacons to their own part of creation. Looking toward the east for Spica, which was rising over the horizon in virginal splendor, I was spellbound by another sphere flashing out of the dark azure of Earth's shadow. It was blue-white and pulsating, and it moved with incredible velocity straight for our tiny, helpless plane. I tapped my husband on the back of his neck. He looked around and saw the enormous craft slow its speed, changing color to a brassy yellow as it leveled out and paced our plane. Fascinated, I observed every detail as I pressed my nose against the starboard window, seeing the bright hazy outline of the great circular ship as it paced alongside. Three portholes, shedding a softer glow, looked out from the side of a dome that sloped up from a vast hull. Beneath the hull, an intense blue-white light alternated with deepest violet, and no sound reached my ears above the frightened roar of the DH moth. Suddenly the great ship flipped onto its side, rolling along like a vast wheel, and then, with a brilliance of intensified light emanation, it disappeared, vanished. How wonderful! I exclaimed into the headset. It was uncanny, my husband said. As I banked away from the craft, it still maintained the same distance. I was not afraid, though I felt as if a magnetic force was influencing my mind. I was sure that we had been thoroughly examined. The craft was the same type of spaceship I had seen as a child, and again, something known flashed into my mind. I found myself longing for its return, and a deep sense of loneliness mysteriously flooded my soul when the great ship vanished into the velvet darkness of the sky. Looking down, I could just discern the vast contours of the Drakensberg. Quathlambo is the Zulu name for this beautiful mountain range lying like a sleeping giant so close to the sea, rugged and mysterious, still hiding the secrets of the universe. Precipitous cliffs, knife-edged against the glow in the west, merged into soft and steep slopes mantled in long green grass, sweeping on as rolling hills to the sea. The mountain peaks guarding the lush softness of a shadowed land, the rolling grass country of Mpofana, where I was born. Dangerous crosswinds threw our light plane about, and I thought that St. Christopher must have pulled strings for us so that we did not end up in a spin over the mountains when my husband had banked and dived to avoid the spaceship. Spica winked at me out of the eastern sky, her lucid glory undimmed, pulsing, flashing blue, white and green, warning of a change in the weather and beckoning us to our rightful course. My mind was far away and filled with a great wonder. Again, the fantastic spaceship had appeared over the same area, and I could sense an affinity beyond normal human conception. With our flight plan completed at Baragwanath, we landed in the teeth of a southeast gale. Visibility was nil as mine dust blew from the dumps. Spica warned me, I said. We were extremely lucky to land in one piece. But all my husband could think about was that thing in the sky. He immediately made a detailed report to Air Force headquarters in Pretoria. What do the experts know about the sky? I remained silent during the interrogation, because I knew they would not understand my feelings in the matter. Military men were unable to cope with such thoughts as mine, but I knew without any shadow of doubt that here was something new, something to break all the rules, something outside the realm of ordinary Earth people, a spaceship of revolutionary design, with an advanced method of propulsion. Had I not seen this same spaceship swoop down over my sister and me years before and again, moving against that ominous tornado cloud long before any nation on Earth could perfect such a craft? What do the experts know about the sky? The secret heights still elude humanity's questing mind. My woman's intuition told me this was an alien ship from the far reaches of outer space. After that, my days of freedom were limited, as my husband packed us away in a ship for England. There, we became a part of the de Havilland Experimental Flight Center. Link with men of other worlds. The plane came in low, streaking across the landing field like a bat out of hell. Shivering, I tried to turn away, but the icy wind pinned me to the verge of the misty field.